Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Big day in Major League Baseball. Derek Jeter, one vote away from a unanimous selection to the Hall of Fame. Larry Walker, as he said on the MLB Network, great player, Hall of Famer, well-deserved, but he's like the B-lister in all of this. So a funny moment from the two of those guys, no doubt. Let's welcome in one of my favorites to talk about these proceedings. I do a lot of television with this guy over at SNY. He is a Hall of Fame voter. He is a well-respected baseball historian who's been covering the sport for a very, very long time. My main man, Anthony McCarron. He joins us. Anthony, good evening, my friend. How are you?
I'm good, JJ. How you doing?
All right, Anthony. Obviously, Derek Jeter, this was a day that we had circled for a long period of time. You knew the minute Jeter retired in 2014 that at this point in 2020, when this Hall of Fame class rolled around, he was going to get in and get in on the first ballot. Now, he's one vote away from the unanimous selection. And I got to be honest with you, Anthony, it doesn't bother me. Now, look, should he be unanimous? Yes. There are plenty of guys who should have been unanimous. But he's going in on the first ballot. I mean, he's got the second highest total in the history of the Hall of Fame. It's very tough for me to get all worked up about this. That said, curious to get your take. How'd you feel when you found out Jeter one vote away from the unanimous selection?
Well, ultimately, JJ, you're right. He's in the right place. I mean, he got to Cooperstown, and it wasn't hard for him to get there as it should be. You know, do I think he should have been 100%? Yeah. I just don't get the argument for not voting for him. I mean, unless there was some strategic maneuver there, as in, you know, Derek Jeter doesn't need my vote. He's getting in anyway. So I'm going to vote for, and I'm picking a name out of a hat, Billy Wagner, because Billy Wagner needs support on the ballot. Unless it was something like that, you know, which I guess has happened in the past. I don't know why you wouldn't vote for Derek Jeter. I mean, are you obsessed with his defensive metrics? And you think that he was a bad shortstop? I mean, my rejoinder to that is the Yankees, every year were a playoff team. They won 5 World Series championships. That doesn't happen if your shortstop is a terrible defensive player, okay? If he's not making all the routine plays. Why isn't this guy a Hall of Famer? In one voter's eyes, I don't get it. But, you know, like you say, we do a little hand-wringing tonight on it and maybe grind on it a little bit and then, you know, then we look forward to induction day in July.
You were a guy that covered Derek Jeter for a good chunk of his career. You witnessed a lot of great Derek Jeter moments. So which one stands out to you the most? I mean, there are so many different ones to choose from. But in your years covering Jeter and covering those great Yankee teams, what comes to mind?
Well, I mean, the one that sort of embodied everything that to me that he was as a player perfectly encapsulated was the moment in that Red Sox midsummer game in 04 where he dove into the stands after the foul ball. You know, if you look at that play and, you know, it's on all of his highlight reels, but it was special to me because it didn't happen in the postseason and it didn't happen in, you know, this clutch moment. It was just a thing. And it was just it exemplified the way he played and as competitive as confident and tough as he was. And it also, because of the way it ended up with him going face first into the stands, it sort of brought Derek Jeter, the celebrity, into it too, because he comes out and his, you know, that face that, you know, had launched 1,000 crushes was bleeding. So he's got, you know, that part of it entered into it too. And, you know, I thought it was just a good moment, you know, because it just showed what kind of a player he was, what kind of grit he had.
Anthony, I got him in 2014 as a guy who had tickets to Derek Jeter's final game. I was pretty nervous because the Yankees were eliminated from postseason contention. There were a whole lot of questions about whether or not the game would be played on a day where it basically rained cats and dogs. The sky's clear at night for Derek Jeter to take center stage one last time. And of course, in Derek Jeter-like fashion, it goes picture perfect. You get a beautiful night. The Yankees get Derek Jeter on the field. David Robertson gives you one of the best blown saves in the history of the sport, only to set the stage for Jeter to come through in the bottom half of the ninth inning in walk-off fashion. Storybook, to say the least. And I guess that final game and that final curtain kind of sums up the Jeter tenure.
Absolutely, JJ. The worst thing any opponent could ever do with this guy is to leave a moment out there for him, because it sure seemed like he cashed in on a whole bunch of them during his career. And that was obviously a big one. And it was a great way for him to end things too. Storybook, you know, we've laughed for years about the idea that Jeter's life is perfect and is a movie. Well, I mean, if you presented me with the script that you've been working on, JJ, that I got a sports movie idea, hero gets the walk-off hit in his last home game at the end of a storied career, I'd say, thanks for the cliche, JJ. Thanks for the, you know, over-hackneyed nonsense. But it came true. It was true. It was Derek Jeter. And it's just amazing stuff. I, for SNY's website, I talked to the scout that signed him yesterday, Dick Groach. Great guy, really nice man. Took some time out to give me some Jeter memories. And one of the things he said during our conversation was that Jeter was always an extra turn of the knob toward success than even, you know, the other guys, the other great players out there. And I think that all came to play in the way he would seize those big moments like that.
We're spending a couple minutes with Anthony McCarron over at SNY. And Anthony, when you look at the case of Larry Walker, I have to admit, my opinion has changed over the last couple of years because of how loaded the ballot has been. I did not list Larry Walker on my ballot, but in his final year of eligibility, I took a look at the numbers one last time, and I got to admit, I was convinced moving forward that he should be in Cooperstown. Three batting titles, well over 300 batting average, OPS over 950 for his career, tremendous defense out in right field, talking about Gold Gloves. And I know a lot of people want to penalize Larry Walker for all those years he played at Coors Field. I, for one, think that's kind of unfair. You're going to do that? Are you going to penalize a pitcher for pitching in a pitcher-friendly ballpark? Are you going to penalize a hitter hitting in, I don't know, Yankee Stadium if you're a left-handed batter with power, or Fenway Park if you're going to take advantage of the Green Monster and whatnot? I, for one, looked at Larry Walker and came to the realization he belonged in Cooperstown. Very happy to find out that he ends up getting enshrined.
Yes, I agree, JJ. I've been voting for him for the last few years. I think one of the things that really hurt Walker's candidacy and why it took until the last year of eligibility for him to get in is the fact that the ballot was so crowded for so long. There's some really good and have been some really good candidates. Even with all the guys who have gotten in lately, there have been players on the ballot for a long time now who are really worthy and deserving of a lot of consideration. And you can only vote for 10 of them every year. And so I think that probably tamped down some votes for Walker, and it took some clearing out of guys, like last year when several got in, which was that was a good sign for Walker to have a real shot this year, and he cashed in on it. The other thing about him, JJ, is that he had some injury issues during his career, but if you ever watched Larry Walker play, especially in his prime, you knew that you were watching one of the most supremely talented players of this era. And, you know, he really was a wonderful offensive player, and he was a tremendous defensive player. And I think this is it's a great thing that he made it. And, the ballot clearing out had a lot to do with it. But Larry Walker's a Hall of Famer and right where he should be, too.
Anthony, looking at the case for Todd Helton now, he's gained some momentum the last few years, but that Coors Field bias maybe has hurt him in the way that it's hurt Larry Walker. Do you see Helton having a much better chance to get in because of what has now transpired here with Larry Walker getting in? I would argue Todd Helton's a Hall of Famer. Look at the 8 or 9 years of dominance, 145-plus RBI-type years. You think Walker getting in is going to help?
Yes, I don't think he'll make a gigantic leap and get in as early as next year, but I do think that he profiles as one of those kinds of guys who will add votes as the voting goes on. You know, we'll probably get at least one guy off of the ballot again next year. I think Curt Schilling is going to have enough momentum to get in next year, and that always helps because, you know, there are plenty of voters who are voting to the limit, 10. I'm one of them. I didn't vote for Helton this year, but I certainly gave him strong consideration and will do so again going forward. And it's easier if I've got spots on my ballot. And now two are open up from this year. And if Schilling goes in, that's another one. And there aren't next year. There isn't a huge class of automatics coming in. So there may be room for him to make some moves towards eventual election, but probably not, you know, as soon as next year.
I'm glad you mentioned Curt Schilling. And look, full disclosure here, Anthony, I think Curt Schilling is very tough to take. I find him very unlikable, but he's without a doubt a Hall of Famer to me. I mean, if you're going to tell the tale of baseball and you're going to talk about one of the most dominant pitchers over the last 25 to 30 years, the big game experience in Arizona combined with the Boston Red Sox, he belongs in Cooperstown. So as a guy who is a Hall of Fame voter, did you have Curt Schilling on your ballot?
I do vote for Curt Schilling, JJ, yes. Based on his career on the mound, and only his career on the mound, he deserves it. He was a tremendous clutch postseason performer. His postseason numbers are remarkable, and he was dynamite during the regular season, too. I think, you know, he's maybe been hurt by the lack of so-called counting stats in some ways that he has, but, you know, we obviously don't look at the win the way we used to, but maybe when he first got on the ballot, maybe some voters were penalizing him because he's got kind of a low win total, you know, but now that should be moving, you know, out of their thinking, and you look at some of the other stuff that he was able to accomplish as a pitcher, and it's all Hall of Fame worthy.
Anthony, I got to admit, I'm getting sick and tired of asking about this. This is becoming the same old song and dance year after year after year. But here we are, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds on the outside looking in. They don't gain a whole lot of momentum, hovering around 60% or so, and they're Hall of Famers to me. Look, it is impossible to look at baseball with the most dominant hitter of his generation and one of the most dominant pitchers of his generation and not to have them enshrined. To me, it just throws me for a loop. So I always love to ask the guys who do have a say, who do have a position of power, where exactly do you stand on the cheaters? And for the premier, the best of the best, Clemens and Bonds, do you have them in?
I did not vote for them early in their candidacies, but I switched over to starting to vote for them and have for the last few years, JJ. And I do think that they ought to be in a place called the Baseball Hall of Fame because they're two of the most obviously supremely talented and famous baseball players of all time. And I think that, you know, to take the steroid era into proper perspective in the game's history, I think you need to have somebody in the Hall of Fame from that era that was a controversial player, because I think people will take it more seriously and be aware of the history more than if you had a dusty exhibit in a side room that said, oh yeah, this guy was a great player, but he's, you know, he's been tainted by performance enhancing drugs. I don't think that has the same impact. Put it on their plaque if you want to, that they did what they did. And, you know, if that's how you want to take it out of their hide, I guess that's fine with me. But, you know, Bonds won 7 MVPs. He's the all-time home run leader. He has a home run record. Clemens won 7 Cy Young Awards. How are they not part of the story of this game? And how are they not featured in the place that celebrates the game in some way, even if you want to celebrate them in a sort of a negative way? If you go there and you're anti-steroid and you see their plaque and it makes you angry, okay, embrace those feelings. That's cool. To me, it's a little bit different with the guys who failed the drug tests after the drugs came in. But, you know, it's not the Hall of Saints. And it's, you know, everybody wants to act like this is, impugning the integrity of the game. Well, is the game, does baseball act with integrity all the time? I mean, we're in the middle of one of the biggest scandals right now in baseball history with the sign stealing. So, you know, I mean, this isn't, we're not talking about, you know, the hallowed halls. I mean, that's that sounds nice, but it doesn't really practice in real life. And those two guys, beyond any of the other players who have their drug histories, had an impact on this game, and it ought to be recognized in Cooperstown.
Before we get you out of here, I came on the air this year throughout the baseball season, and last year for that matter, making the case that when his time comes, C.C. Sabathia will absolutely be enshrined in Cooperstown. You look at how judging a pitcher has changed dramatically in this era of bullpens, guys not going deep into games like they once did. I don't think the numbers of 300 wins and some of those threshold-type numbers we've had in the past are going to be the case for the modern-day pitchers. So looking into the crystal ball, thinking a couple of years down the line, we're going to find C.C. Sabathia in Cooperstown?
I think he is going to get it, J.J. I think he's got a very strong case for Cooperstown. You know, it's been fun. It's funny because over the length of his time with the Yankees, I've had many an argument with a Yankee fan or another journalist about the value and the worth of that contract that he signed with them. And everybody was, you know, this was, of course, after he had started to be on the downside of his career, and he wasn't as good as he was when he first arrived in 2009, when he was simply one of the best pitchers in baseball and continued to be that for a few years in Yankee pinstripes. And everybody keeps saying, well, you know, that it wasn't worth it. Look at him now. Look at him now. And it's like, you know what? This guy has put so much into the bank and then had a resurgence after a down period in his career, after he reinvented himself, that added, I think, a nifty dimension to his career that will really enhance his candidacy. I love what he did in Milwaukee when he laid his career and his free agency on the line to try to get the Brewers deep into the playoffs, pitching every third day, being incredible while doing it. You know, he obviously won a Cy Young in Cleveland, and then he was the head of a playoff rotation in pinstripes for a while as well. You know, he accumulated a bunch of really nice counting numbers. He was one of the best pitchers in baseball for an extended period of time. You know, CeCe's got my vote as far as I'm concerned.
Anthony McCarron over at SNY. Anthony, appreciate a couple of minutes. Outstanding perspective on all this good stuff. And I'll be seeing you on Saturdays throughout the baseball season. I'll be here before you know it, my friend.
Yeah, same here, JJ.
Great stuff there from Anthony McCarron.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around waiting for the track to dry is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Brayton, we're in it together. Every Friday brings you a new story. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Brayton wherever you get your podcasts.